Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice was released by his team and suspended indefinitely by the NFL on Monday after a video surfaced showing the player punching his then-fiancée and knocking her unconscious in an elevator.
It's a high-profile case that's shining the spotlight on the issue of domestic violence.
Joining us now is Christopher Mollering. He's the director of the Domestic Violence and Women's Rights Clinic at the University of Buffalo Law School. Christopher, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
First off, Christopher, what was your reaction when this story broke with this video yesterday?
Well, I was happy to see the NFL taking a stronger stance. I think there was a lot of criticism from a lot of sources of the NFL's original suspension of Ray Rice of only two games. And I don't know how much information the NFL had when they made that initial decision, but in light of the new video, it seems appropriate, both the NFL suspension and the Ravens' termination of Ray Rice's contract.
Have you watched the video?
I have.
What did you think?
It's disturbing, and I think for a lot of people who may not be familiar with domestic violence, I think it was a real wake-up call. It's a graphic video.
I had no intention of watching it, and then a friend told me I really should see it to care about it, and I did, and I'm still kind of recovering from seeing it. It's about 3 minutes and 34 seconds long, something like that, but it feels like forever watching her get up from the ground. What do you think this says, this video, to women watching who are victims of domestic violence, and the fact that this is so public?
Well, I hope that the fact that this is such a high profile case will encourage women maybe who were hesitant to speak up or who felt muzzled by the situation in which they find themselves just to seek help to tell someone else about what they're going through to take their case to the court or to an advocate or to a friend. I hope that this incident, will have that positive outcome of encouraging women to break their silence, because this is an issue that affects one in four American women at some point in their lifetime are going to be victims of domestic violence, and so it's a problem that needs a lot more of a spotlight shown on it.
Is there a mixed message going on? This morning we have the wife of Ray Rice saying, this feels like a nightmare, we're working through it, we both regret it. I don't know, sort of conciliatory language and sort of brushing off, minimizing the incident. Is that undoing some of the good it could do to draw attention and consciousness about domestic violence?
I read his wife's comments, and one of the things I sort of the first thing I thought when Roger Goodell announced the new NFL policy was, good, the NFL is taking a much stronger stance on an issue where they need to have leadership. And my second thought was, what are going to be the unintended consequences of this policy? And I think we're seeing that with Jhené Rice. One of those unintended consequences, I think, is that in a situation like the NFL, where there is so much money involved, a suspension or a lifetime ban sees not only the player, but his family and other people that may benefit from his lucrative salary. All of them stand to lose a lot of money. And so I think, one of the consequences that we could see is that actually victims might be less inclined to come forward, because there's going to be increased pressure on them, whether it's because they're considering their own families and their children who are supported by the NFL salary, or whether that pressure is coming from the player, or whether it's coming from the group of people around him who stand to benefit from his salary. There could actually be increased pressure on victims of domestic violence not to come forward because of the amount of money that we're talking about being lost if a player is suspended or banned. So I think that might be one of the things that we're seeing here in the case of Ray Rice's wife, is that those are the things that she is thinking about, the loss of the money for her and for her family. And I do think that it's problematic, and it's something that I think you see in a lot of domestic violence situations women sort of brushing it off or making apologies or making excuses for behavior that is really unacceptable under any circumstances.
Going back to the NFL, do you think that now that they've started to take some steps toughening their stance against domestic violence, that they need to look at the policy and consider financial implications too, and think about, you know, more sophisticated or nuanced ways to handle this when it happens, so it's not a blanket punishment, but you take a look at exactly who is being punished?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll have to see how the new policy plays out, because the way that I read Roger Goodell's statement is that he set down a 6-game suspension for the first offense, a lifetime ban for the second offense, but that there are potential enhancements if certain things happen, like if the victim is pregnant, and there are also certain types of situations in which that penalty might be reduced, and he didn't really outline what those might be, but it'll be interesting to see if the NFL is able to, you know, to implement this policy in a way that really takes into account the individual situations rather than treating them all alike, because these situations are not all alike. But I do think that I was happy to see that the NFL took a very strong stance after the initial Ray Rice suspension, because the NFL needs to take a leadership role in this area.
Now, for some women, well, I'm thinking about Janae this morning, sort of writing that she was sorry about the role that she had played the night of the incident. That was on May 23rd, and she tweeted that this morning. It sort of creates a narrative that sometimes in relationships, there's a big mistake and someone gets punched, someone punches, but you can put it behind you and move forward. Is that the case ever? Do you see that, where someone in a relationship gets abused, but it's a one-off and they just move forward and learn from it? Does that happen, or is that a fantasy?
Well, I mean, I think it's... I don't think it would be accurate to say that every instance of violence within a relationship is indicative of an abusive relationship. I think there are probably cases in which an incident of violence happens once, and the couple is able to move on from that, and there are no further incidents. So I don't want to make a blanket statement, but I think that that's generally not the case. I think generally when you see, and I don't know about Ray Rice's situation specifically, but I think in general when you see these incidents, when you see the violence, oftentimes that's just the tip of the iceberg. A lot of times there are a lot of other types of abuse that are already going on. A lot of times abusers will isolate their victims, will keep them from having social interactions with family, with friends, with other people. They could be controlling their finances and withholding money or controlling money. There can be ritual sort of humiliation of the victim, verbal humiliation. And there can be threats to injure not only the victim, but the victim's children or members of the family. So I think there's a lot of types of abuse that we don't necessarily see when we see that incidence of violence. So, I think we have to be, very careful about thinking about these situations as one-off situations, because a lot of times they're not. A lot of times there is a pattern mm-hmm. of abuse that you can see stretching back, even if that abuse isn't necessarily always or hasn't been to this point physical.
All right. I want to jump in and get a call in quickly here. Tina in La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I guess I'm coming from an older perspective, and also having worked most of my life in the military, I saw the video, and he's a hard, muscular man, and she was a little fluff of nothing, but it wasn't for her lack of trying. I mean, she dove at him. He should not have hit her. He should have pulled his punch because basically he's stronger than her. But there seems to be a lot of toxic relationships where the woman bites, spits, kicks, punches. Just the fact that she can't punch and can't fight is the only reason he's not injured.
All right. Thank you for your thoughts, Tina. And we've got about 30 seconds or so for your response before we go to news, Christopher.
Sure. You know, I think we have to be be careful in this instance, because the simple fact that a woman you know, is standing up to a potential abuser does not make that abuse less real or less of a problem. So, like I said, I don't know the specifics of Ray and Janae Rice's situation, whether there is a history there or whether this might have been a one-off situation. But I think that the simple fact that we saw his wife engage in some kind of a physical alteration should not take the burden off of him not to have hit her and not to to have let the situation.
Talking with Christopher Mollering about the ongoing Ray Rice story and the issue of domestic violence in the United States.
You can join in with your reaction to this story and your thoughts on whether we're putting enough emphasis on fighting domestic violence in the U.S. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation after the news.
We're talking about domestic violence in the United States following the fallout from the recently released video that shows football player Ray Rice punching and knocking out his then-fiancé in an elevator. Our guest is Christopher Mollering, director of the Domestic Violence and Women's Rights Clinic at the University of Buffalo Law School.
And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. As a society, are we taking domestic violence seriously? What more should we be doing to prevent it? How would you like to see the NFL or other high-profile organizations step up and take the lead on the issue of domestic violence? You can call in at 800-642-1234 or post over at the Central Time Facebook page.
Yeah, we go to our phone lines now. We've got Sharon with us from Wautoma. Hi, Sharon.
Hi there. As hard as he hit her, and I put my DVR on real slow, I mean, he cold-cocked her. She should either have a busted jaw or a broken cheekbone. And if he hit her like that once, he's been hitting her for a while. And why she married him? God knows. Maybe she was in it for the money, but she better get out real fast before he kills her. I mean, that was ridiculous. He hit her so hard, she went flying.
Thank you. Thank you for calling, Sharon. You're depicting what is a very graphic and upsetting video. Maybe we can take from that call, Christopher, why she married him. I mean, it's a complicated thing, but can you speak to a little bit what happens in relationships like that when the victim stays with the abuser?
Sure. I think that's there's a very common misconception in the general population about women who stay with their abusers, and that, you know, that this perhaps is indicative of, you know, some sort of masochistic tendencies, or that it must not be that bad if the woman won't leave. And that's a real problem when we're talking about this area, because there are all kinds of reasons why someone might stay in this kind of relationship. The kind of dynamic that you have, you know, is generally that the abuser tends to be generally fairly charismatic. And initially, these relationships don't usually start out as abusive. That usually happens later in the relationship. So, you know, some of the reasons why a woman might stay in an abusive relationship is that, you know, she loves the person, even despite the abuse. There could be issues of you know, financial support. You know, if the woman doesn't have job skills or a job because the abuser has been isolating her, has been controlling her finances, the act of leaving can be an expensive one if she doesn't have any financial resources. There could be threats against her, against her family, against her children. A lot of times, you know, when these cases go to court, abusers will seek to use the court system in the venue of seeking custody as a way of lashing back out against the victim. So there's all kinds of reasons why someone might stay in one of these relationships that has nothing to do with, you know, with the fact that they, you know, that they you know, like it, or that they're, you know, masochistic or anything like that. There's a lot of legitimate reasons, and I think that's not always well conveyed when we're thinking about these issues and talking about these issues.
And we go next to Nick, joining us in Greenfield. Hi, Nick.
Yeah, hi there. I appreciate your guest. He is talking about one of the important things, and I want to say three things. First of all, I was lucky as a boy growing up. I had a dad that taught me two things. He said, one, he says, a man is less than a man if he has to hit a woman. I started hearing that when I was about 9, 10 years old. And the second thing he taught me, he says, son, he says, you're going to meet women that are smarter than you. You're a pretty smart kid, but there are women out there that are smarter than you. Don't substitute your physical size and strength trying to offset their intelligence. So those are the two lessons that he taught me as I was growing up. But what I called to say was the NFL, in my opinion, went from a slap on the wrist, you know, 60 days probation, to hanging. What happened to the 6-game suspension? Why didn't they go from 2 games to 6 games if he did it again? Then how?
Gotcha. Thanks, Nick, for your thoughts there. And, you know, talking about the suspension there, and he's been released from his contract with the Ravens. But what do you think about the punishment fitting the crime? This is one aspect of domestic violence. We're talking about football here, and most domestic abuse cases happen outside the realm of pro sports. But if we look at this here, what do you think about the appropriateness, Christopher?
Yeah, so I did think that the initial 2-game suspension of Ray Rice was too lenient, and I think that was a very general consensus, not only in the field that studies this stuff, but in the general public. I thought that the 6-game suspension for a first offense and a lifetime ban for a second offense that Roger Goodell suggested in the letter he sent to the NFL owners, I thought was a much better policy. A much tougher policy, but also one that, you know, that recognized, you know, that sometimes and in some circumstances there can be mistakes and people deserve a second chance if they've made a single mistake. Whether or not this, this is an overreaction by the NFL, I think it's hard to say. The video is pretty barbaric. But the NFL, I think there is, an issue with that they need to consider about, they've put out this policy and now they have again changed their stance, as Nick mentioned. So, I think the Ravens' decision to terminate his contract is totally separate from that. They obviously have the right to make that decision or not. And I wonder if some of the severity of the NFL and the Ravens sanction is indicative of the fact that they don't believe that Ray Rice was fully truthful with them when this first happened. I know they're saying they didn't see the video until it was released by TMZ Sports, today or very recently, and so maybe the punishment is indicative of that fact that Ray Rice wasn't fully honest with the team and with the NFL about what really happened that night. And now we can see what really happened that night. So
we're talking about this out in the open right now because the video is out there, because he's a pro football player, but a lot of the time this isn't a part of our everyday conversation. How widespread is the problem of domestic violence in the United States?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Most of the time, these incidents are not happening to a high-profile person, and so we're not seeing them. But domestic violence affects 1 in 4 women in the United States, 25%. So if you think about your grandmother, your mother, your sister, your daughter, there's your 4 women right there. Not that this will happen in every family or to every person, but it doesn't take a lot to, if people think about all the women in their lives that they know, to find someone who's been affected by domestic violence. So, I think I hope that this incident will cause more people to talk about this issue, to think about this issue, and that it'll let, you know, give victims the ability to, you know, to talk about these kind of things with friends, with family, with advocates. But it's definitely an issue that is much more widespread than I think we would like to admit, and it's an issue that really deserves a lot more attention than I think it gets on a regular basis.
And Christopher, in our last minute, what do you want victims to know about how to get help if they find themselves in a situation that might be like this?
Well, you know, there are increasingly good resources available across the country. There are organizations that will provide a one-stop shop for victims of domestic violence. So they'll help them with alternative housing arrangements, with beginning court proceedings, with child care. So I think the key thing for victims to know is that there are those resources out there, and they, you know, when they are able to work up the courage to leave a toxic relationship, even if that takes several times for them to be able to make that final break from a dangerous and toxic relationship, that there are resources out there. There are people who are there looking to help victims of domestic violence. And so these victims of domestic violence are not alone. And they should, I hope that that's what they take away from this, is that there are a lot of people that that want to provide help. And so, you know, I hope that those victims will take this opportunity to reach out and utilize those resources.
Christopher, thanks a lot for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Veronica.
That was Christopher Mollering, Director of the Domestic Violence and Women's Rights Clinic at the University at Buffalo Law School.